is 1:05 p.m. on Wednesday, August the 25th, 2010. Calling to order the special meeting. The main item on the meeting today is a disability hearing for Robert Colvin. And then there will be some other minor general business that we take care of after the disability hearing. I'm going to go ahead and call our attorney. Get him on the phone because this is going to be a conference meeting where he's going to be on the phone to answer any of our questions. Come on in. Hold on a second. We're getting our attorney on the line, so it's going to be a conference.
Good afternoon.
Hi, this is Randy up in Ocala.
Hi, Randy. Hold on.
Okay.
Where would be best for us to sit for you guys?
Anywhere down there would be fine.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon, everyone. Am I on speaker?
Yes, you are.
If you could please identify for me who is in the room.
Okay, myself, Randy Griffin, board members.
Shane Alexander.
Astrida Tropovnicks.
Brett Stark.
And
I'm guest on observer, Rick Horn, treasury manager in the city of Ocala, treasury officer.
Robert Colvin.
And this is Paul Kelly here on behalf of Robert Colvin.
Fantastic. And Randy, have you called the meeting to order yet?
Yes, I have. That's all I've done is I just called the meeting to order.
And also the tape recorder is on, I take it?
Correct.
Very good.
All right, Adam, do you want to give us a quick...
Right, let me do a little bit of an introductory survey for everyone. I want to, of course, welcome the attorneys who came in from out of town, as well as our applicant, and just so everyone understands, and if you want to put the telephone close to the speaker for the recording device, this is an informal administrative hearing before the pension board, and as everybody knows, the pension board trustees are fiduciaries, and you guys call it as you see it. And that's the reason why when you received the application, the process was that you went through the city, and then that you went through our office, and you went through the attorneys who were representing the applicant to assemble all of the relevant medical information, including information from the applicant's file, and that some of that dates all the way back to when he was hired. So once you assemble all that information, Randy worked with our office to figure out who we wanted to use as a doctor who wouldn't be a League of Cities doctor necessarily, who wouldn't be a personal injury doctor who might be for sale, so to speak. You want an independent, call it as you see, a doctor who's going to evaluate the job criteria, the job description, look at all the medical information that we just talked about, and make a decision on the merits. So what we wound up doing, and Randy can talk about that later if he ever wanted to know, was he looked at some CVs or resumes from other doctors in your neck of the woods who do similar kinds of pension disabilities, and you wound up using a doctor that the Orlando Police, which is one of our other clients, use. So long story short, when all the medical records were put together, they were sent to Dr. Nocero, and everyone should have a copy of Dr. Nocero's report from approximately 2 or so weeks ago. And does everyone have that in front of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, everyone should have a copy of the notebook, if that's what we want to call it, that was assembled by Randy and by our office. And included in that material should be the job description, more medical records than you necessarily want to spend time reading in too much detail, but the complete file should be there. And I'll also point out to you that the applicant, when I'm done speaking, and his attorney, will have an opportunity to go into as much detail as they want. And again, this is an informal proceeding, so if trustees have questions for me, and sometimes it's hard to do when we're on phone, but as always, I welcome trustees, if I'm talking too quick, to slow me down and to chime in. Likewise, if anyone else in the room has any questions, feel free to do that. So the reason we're here is a disability application, and I'll before we get into any details, I'll point out that a question often comes up. We're operating in the sunshine because we're a governmental entity, and we operate. If anyone wants to come in, they can come in. They can listen. If the media, anyone else wants to participate, they can sit in. They can take notes. And at the same time, we're going to have an open conversation. The records themselves are confidential medical records. So when all is said and done, once the board makes a decision, which could be today or some other time, once the process is finished, all the copies copies will be collected. All the electronic unnecessary copies will be deleted. We'll keep one final copy, which will be in the records of the plan. But all the other copies are going to be destroyed because we're dealing with confidential medical records. But for that same reason, though, we are allowed and we are required to discuss whatever the board thinks is relevant so you can make a proper, informed decision. So that's a little bit of background about the medical records and the process. And I'll also describe to everybody, and you know, before I go into more detail, are there any questions so far about what we discussed?
No.
Okay, continuing with the background, there are essentially three requirements for an applicant in order to meet the requirements for a duty disability under both your pension plan and under Chapter 175 Florida statutes. And to keep things nice and simple, the three requirements are, in the context of this application, you have to be permanently and totally disabled from doing the job of a firefighter. So that's totality, that's permanence, and the other requirement, if it's a duty disability, is you have to be able to establish that the cause of the disability is related to or caused by the job. And in the Florida statutes, in Chapter 175, also in Chapter 112, trustees will know, and I think the attorneys in the room will agree, that there is a heart bill presumption. So if the cause of the disability is related to heart disease and pertains to heart disease, then you treat the heart disease presumption as applying, because who knows what causes heart disease, and the legislature determined in their wisdom that the job of being a firefighter and public safety officer is causally linked to the condition of heart disease and to certain other kinds of conditions. So long story short, that will give you this presumption that will satisfy one of the requirements, and that there's no evidence in the file, in my mind, to rebut the presumption. So really all you're left with today, so long as you agree that he suffers from heart disease, and I'm not going to go into details, we'll allow the attorneys to do that on the medical reports, but it's pretty clear you've had some cardiac catheterization, you had stenting, you also had bypass surgery, so there's no doubt that there is heart disease, which means that satisfies the service-related requirement or that prong. So all we have to worry about today is totality and permanence. And I'll also explain to everybody that the applicant has the burden of proof here today. The board doesn't have to prove anything. I don't have to prove anything. And my job is to represent the board, so I don't take a position today. I just help you navigate through the statutory and the other legal requirements. But the applicant I'm wondering, were there any additional information? Was anything else brought today, or we just have the materials that were provided by Randy in the notebook?
No supplements today.
Okay, no supplements. And you're not required to provide any supplements, but if there's any additional supplemental material that you wanted to provide, you have that ability. And the other question is, does everyone have in their packages to make sure everything is here? Not only the report from Dr. Nocera, but the two physician reports that were provided by the applicant. This is from two other doctors, and they should probably be in the front of everyone's packet.
Yes, they are here.
So there's a total of three doctors who weighed in so far, and let me ask all the trustees, are there any questions about the three requirements, totality, permanence, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about totality and permanence, but any questions so far about the three requirements, totality, permanence, and that the condition be service-related?
No, but if you could speak a little slower, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, and I thank you for that observation. So slowing me down a little bit, there are three requirements. It has to be a total condition, a total disability. It has to be permanent disability, and it has to be related to the job. And in the case of heart disease, the heart disease is presumed to be job-related. So you really need to concentrate on just two items here, which is totality and permanence. And that raises the question, what is totality? What is a total disability? What is a permanent disability? And to keep that nice and simple for you, and this is another question for everyone, in your packet, do you have a copy of Section 9.01 of the pension plan? This is Article 9, Section 9.01. Was that distributed to everybody?
No.
Okay, let me read it to you, and this is just me reading from the pension ordinance. And it says, a member shall be disabled under the terms of the plan if the member has suffered an illness, injury, or disease which renders the member permanently and totally incapacitated, physically or mentally, from regular and continuous duty as a firefighter. So that's your answer, that a disease is a total disease for purposes of a disability if you are prevented either because of a physical or mental disability from regular and continuous duty as a firefighter. And that's why you have the job description, which was provided to Dr. Nocera, setting forth what the elements are, what the job requirements are for firefighters. So long long story short, Section 9.01 of the pension plan describes it can be a physical or mental condition which prevents you from regular and continuous duty as a firefighter, and there's no likelihood of that condition improving in the short term, and is expected to continue to be a permanent condition. So those are the three requirements: totality, permanence, and that it's service-related, and the fact that you have heart disease. The legislature has said heart disease gets you to the service-connected cause. So that's the background from my standpoint. Okay. And what I want to do now is take a step back. I've described to everybody the way the Sunshine Law works, so trustees should feel free, if there are any questions they have for me or any questions they have from the applicant and the applicant's attorneys, trustees should feel free to ask questions. We are keeping minutes of today's board meeting, and when the minutes are prepared, the minutes become a public record. And with that said, let me offer up to the attorney and to the applicant an opportunity to survey and to summarize anything that they think is relevant, recognizing that they have the duty of demonstrating that the requirements are satisfied. And I think the condition and that the discussion really needs to focus, at least at the outset, on the, let's make sure everyone has had a chance to look at the independent report from the IME, from Dr. Nocero, dated 6/21 of 2010 was when the visit took place.
Hold on, Adam.
Yep.
This is Estrida. I'd like you to go over causality again, the presumption of causality.
Right. Causation is very simple because of what the legislature decided. And let me compare a heart disease case from a back injury. Now, let's say someone had a back injury, and let's say they had football injuries when they were growing up. Let's say that they may have fallen down at home. They may have fallen down again when they were in the fire department. They may have had various incidents when they're sliding down a pole or jumping off a truck, which could over time cause a back injury. So that's going to be a little bit different than in the context of heart disease. And what the legislature said with heart disease is that if it's clear that you had a clean bill of health when you were hired, and Randy can speak to that because you have all these medical records in Ocala, when they hire firefighters, Ocala gives them a screening and they give them a physical exam to set a baseline to determine whether or not you had heart disease when you were hired. So as long as you have a clean bill of health when you came in, the legislature has said, and this isn't something we have any choice over, this is mandatory, and it's this presumption. It's a rebuttable presumption, but the presumption itself is a mandatory feature of the way 175 and 185 operate. And if you want to get your money from the Division of Retirement from Tallahassee, you have to comply with the requirements of the statute. And one of those requirements is that there's this presumption. And the presumption says that if you had a clean bill of health when you were hired, but yet if you manifest heart disease as a police officer or firefighter, we presume that it's service-related. And one of the things our doctor can say, looking at the individual's family history and other circumstances, your doctor could say that there are other causes which make it more likely to be the case than the job. But here, your Dr. Nocero is comfortable, and I don't want to spend too much time on Dr. Nocero because I think the applicant can probably do a good job summarizing it, but Dr. Nocero recognizes that the presumption applies, and what I'm trying to explain to everybody is I wouldn't spend too much time today evaluating the presumption because this is basically a requirement that for purposes of today's conversation, the third element, which is causation, is satisfied for you.
Okay. We have that Florida State Statutes 175.231. It's the presumption bill. It says disease of the firefighter suffered in the line of duty. Presumption for any municipality, special fire control district, chapter plan, local law, municipality, local law, special fire control district, or local law plan under this chapter. Any condition or impairment of health of a firefighter caused by tuberculosis, hypertension, or heart disease resulting in total or partial disability or death shall be presumed to have been accidental and suffered in the line of duty unless the contrary is shown by competent evidence, providing that such firefighter shall have successfully passed a physical examination before entering into such service, which examination failed to reveal any evidence of such condition.
Right, and one of the reasons why the legislature created this presumption, which has been on the books for some time, is it's hard to determine exactly what causes heart disease. And there may be various things that contribute and cause heart disease, but the legislature has recognized that police officers and firefighters empirically have a higher incidence of heart disease than the general population, die at earlier ages because of heart disease, and this is one of the territory that comes with the job. So that's why the legislature wrote that into the statute. So again, I don't think we need to spend too much time on the presumption, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have, and Randy just read for you the language in 175.231.
Okay, so causation is not an issue because it is heart-related, and it, according to state law, it is considered service-related.
Correct.
So I don't really have to worry or spend any time on causation. All right, I would like to just go over a few things that I have written down, and then we'll turn it over to the attorney and let him plead their case. It is a quasi-judicial informal hearing, and Bob, it is confidential. It is open to the sunshine. All your medical records are here, and they're open. You know, it is open, and sometimes there's embarrassing stuff and different stuff in your medical files. I just wanted to let you know that with HIPAA laws and everything else, if this is an open meeting, it's in the sunshine, this tape recording will be on the internet and anybody can come and listen to it. I just want you to understand, I don't think we're going to get into anything that personal, but I just want you to understand that aspect of it. One other thing is I would like to know if there's any objections to procedure, because there has been some miscommunication. Bob and I have been talking for a month about when we were going to be here. He got his plane ticket and all that other stuff. And we got an email on Saturday morning from
James Spears
from the office stating that they would not attend today, nor would their client be attending to today's meeting due to short notice. But it was miscommunication between whoever. But anyways, in the end, they decided to come. So I just wanted to make sure that there's no objections to going to procedure to continuing forth today.
So everyone who's supposed to be here is here. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Everybody who's supposed to be here is here. And we have absolutely no objections. As a matter of fact, we want to thank you for getting him in so quickly.
Okay.
So we appreciate that.
Okay. All right, then. Should we start with the opening at the client would like to do it, have you got to give an opening statement if you choose?
Bob has asked me to do that on his behalf.
Okay.
That's all.
I get a little nervous though.
Okay.
Adam, can you hear me all right?
I can, and everyone speak up. You're doing a great job. Thank you.
Okay. This is Paul Kelly, and I have the pleasure of representing Bob here on his application for an in-line of duty disability pension. And the first thing he's asked me to express to you all is thank you for moving so quickly to get him before this board. A lot of agencies haven't done this for other people, and we want to tell you all thank you. We do appreciate that. I know it caused a little confusion in our office, but we were able to work it out to where we could be here, so thank you for that. As Adam delineated, there are three criteria that Bob must meet in order to be eligible for an in-line of duty disability pension. The first one is that it has to be totally disabling, second, that it's permanent, and third, that it's in-line of duty. The total disability he went through very well based on your section of the code indicates disability is incapacity from performing his, a lot of terms are useful and efficient work as a firefighter. Here, this pension board section specifically, call it the regular and continuous work. In your package, you will have three different forms. That it's a physician report form for the City of Ocala Firefighter Supplemental Pension Fund. One was filled out by your independent medical examiner, Dr. Michael Nocero. The other one was filled out by Paul Urban. And then the last one is Dr. Gahari. And basically, all three of them have said the same thing. As far as whether or not this is totally disabled, they all agree it is totally disabling, which means although he may be able to work another job, he cannot do the useful and efficient or the regular and customary work of the firefighter. Because of his medical condition, he is precluded from doing that. So just for clarification for the board, all you have to do is look at whether or not he can do the job as a firefighter, not whether he can work any other job. Second thing is whether or not that total disability is permanent. In other words, is there any medical treatment, whether it be medications, surgeries, therapies, any modality of medications or treatment that would change his total disability to a place where he could come back and do the work. The doctors have all indicated he's reached a point of maximum medical improvement, which is basically that he said, we've done everything we can for you. This is the best you're going to get. There's nothing further we can do that's going to make you able to go back. And so on their forms, each of them have circled number one, is permanently disabled. So we meet those two criteria. And because of the question about in-line of duty disability, Randy, thank you for reading Florida Statutes 175-231. That, in conjunction with 112.18, is what is commonly referred to as the Florida Heart Lung Bill. And because you all have a fiduciary obligation to make sure that Bob is eligible before this, before granting it, I want to make sure for your benefit on the record we have evidence that he meets that as well. Even though Adam graciously said we don't have to meet that burden, let me tell you, under the Florida Heart Lung Bill, there are four criteria Bob must meet in order to be eligible for the Heart Lung Bill, or the presumption afforded under one. First of all, he has to be a member of the covered class. There are three class members. It is firefighters, law enforcement officers, and then correctional officers, which also include correctional probation officers. As a firefighter EMT, he meets that first prong. He is a member of the covered class. Second thing is he has to have developed a covered condition. There are only three conditions that are covered under the Florida Heart Lung Bill, and that's hypertension, heart disease, and tuberculosis. Bob, being the overachiever that he is, went ahead and got two out of the three. He has essential hypertension and coronary artery disease. That is in the records. As a matter of fact, Dr. Nocero's report that you'll see from his IME visit in June of 2010 specifically indicates he's got essential hypertension and coronary artery disease, which led to a double bypass and subsequently another stenting. So he meets the second prong of that. The third prong, as Randy pointed out earlier in reading the statute itself, says that upon entry into any such service, that member or the applicant has to have had a pre-employment physical, and that pre-employment physical has to have failed to show any evidence of the claimed condition. Here we're looking at hypertension and heart disease. He underwent a pre-employment physical with the city of Ocala that they actually had him go on several visits because he had to do chest x-rays, EKGs, back x-rays, a variety of things. Those were done in April and May of 1989. He was found to be within normal limits. There was no evidence of ischemia, infarction, or anything on the chest x-rays. His EKG was within normal limits, and his blood pressure was 104 over 70, 72, I apologize. That's also within the medical records you've been provided, and Dr. Nocero refers in his reports that there is no indication of hypertension or heart disease on the pre-employment physical. So those three prongs are met. The last one is similar to what we talked about, is as a result of the claimed or covered conditions, he has to have sustained a disability. The disability pursuant to the statute can be either a temporary disability or a permanent disability, but the disability for the statute's purpose is an incapacity to perform your regular or useful work as a firefighter. Here, his happens to be permanent, which also coincides with the board's requirements. When he meets those four prongs, the presumption of work-relatedness is then afforded to the applicant. It is then, as Randy pointed out, what they call a rebuttable presumption. If someone has evidence that his cardiac conditions, whether it's hypertension or heart disease, was related to something other than his employment, they have to come in with that, and it has to be competent, substantial evidence, or depending on if there's evidence to support the presumption, then it has to be overcome by clear and convincing evidence. Here, none of the physicians were able to point to a single cause other than his employment for the hypertension or heart disease. As a matter of fact, Dr. Nocero indicates that the essential hypertension, by definition, is of unknown etiology, and as Randy pointed out, nobody can tell us what caused his coronary artery disease. We can tell you risk factors, but can't pinpoint it. It is our position, based on the Florida Heart Lung Bill, as well as the medical records that have been provided from each of the treating physicians and your own board's IME, that Mr. Colvin has met the prongs and the requirements to be afforded an in-line of duty disability pension from this board. And it's our request that this board would put forward a motion to grant him the in-line of duty disability pension and grant that. We are available to answer any questions that this board may have. And please feel free to ask me or my client if there's any that you have.
Trustees, this is Adam Levinson on the phone, and I have one question for everyone in the room, which is whether or not everyone has in their file a copy of the 1989 pre-hire physical that was referred to, which closes the door, so to speak, and is a way of evidencing that there was a clean bill of health for the presumption to apply. Everyone has a copy of that?
No. We have that in our, and I can get a copy for everybody, but...
Is there one copy that can be circulated around the table?
I have got a copy that I can get to real quick. I don't know if you have it tabbed in yours.
It's
so I can pull it out fairly quickly here. And What I did is I creased the three pages of the main pages. There's also the blood work if y'all would like to see it, but the main pages that y'all need to have are the EKG, the stress test, the chest x-ray, and the one with the blood pressure. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'll provide these to you and let you pass them around as you see fit.
And not only that, but we go to the cardiac center here in town behind the mall, and we have our stress test done every year or every 2 or 3 years.
For a while, I was doing it every 6 months because I was on the hazmat team.
Right. Yes. So he has been to the cardiology center and has had stress tests to look for cardiac disease throughout, not just pre-employment, but throughout his career, and all of those came back that there was no problem.
And that is contained within the medical packet you have there.
Correct. All those visits to the cardiac center are in the files that were sent to everybody by email.
Trustee, another question that commonly comes up is whether or not trustees are allowed to ask questions to applicants, to Mr. Colvin. And the answer is that he's not required to answer questions, but you can sort of hold that against him if he doesn't want to answer questions. So I encourage trustees, if this is the time to ask questions for the applicant and or his attorney. And for example, the kind of questions that are routinely asked might include, what has he been doing the last X number of months when he's been on light duty or otherwise the department has had him, we're paying him for workers' comp purposes, but he's not working as a firefighter. What has he been doing the last X number of months? Another question that you'll commonly hear discussed or asked is, for example, if you look at Dr. Nocera's medical report, this is the bottom of page number, this is really the bottom of the first page, the history of the present illness. It mentions medications, and by my count, excluding aspirin, and does everyone have an opportunity to flip over to that report from Dr. Nocera? Very bottom of the first page, I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, it looks like 4 or 5 medicines, depending on if you're including aspirin. Is he still taking those medicines? And you can ask him, you know, does he regularly take it? And does he follow his doctor's orders? But, you know, that's an example of the sorts of things that trustees are allowed to ask. And again, if you're going to ask questions, if the board's going to make a vote today, this is the time to do it.
I have a question. I'm looking at the report that, what is your name?
Paul Kelly.
Paul Kelly distributed, and it's in City of Ocala Employee Health Clinic Annual Assessment. Is this supposed to be the pre-employment?
If you look at the date of that,
yes,
that's the
98.
That's the 98. I've grabbed the wrong one. There's an 89 one, sorry.
Yeah, this is 98.
Okay. That's one of the ones that Randy was just referring to that they have annually.
Okay.
And there was no cardiac disease even in 98.
In 98.
In 98, yes.
And there wasn't in 89 either.
Okay.
Adam, I had a question for you. This is Shane Alexander, Pension Board Trustee. Are you there?
I am, please.
Are there any other requirements that you have in front of you there in the ordinance for the disability? Because I know what the attorney has covered, but there are other requirements from the board, are there not, where they can be revisited years down the road, or there's other requirements or details other than just the whether he's entitled to the disability. Do you have those in front of you?
Sure, and trustees, maybe that's something that we could do at another meeting, is discuss the other features of the disability program. And I respect and I welcome these kind of questions, but you know, today I want you to focus on whether or not we want to grant it or not, and whether or not the requirements are met. And let me just give you an example of what I think you're referring to. From time to time, the board has the ability to have someone re-examined. So, for example, I don't want to use anyone's name, but if you make a decision today to do something, and a year or two from now you may decide, well, let's have someone looked at. And there are stranger things have happened. We've got pension plans where a member is granted a disability. This could be police or fire or general employees, and it's different from general employees than it is for police or fire. And lo and behold, you know, within a couple of years, they decide that they're continuing to collect a disability pension, but they got a job as a police or firefighter with another department. And that's pretty inconsistent that you can't simultaneously be disabled from one city and be working as a law enforcement officer, police officer in a different city. So that's an example of down the road the options that the board has. But today I want to keep everyone's attention focused, and again, I welcome the questions, but focused on the three elements, the totality, the permanence, the medical records you have in front of you, and the presumption. And I think we've done a good job job of summarizing how the presumption applies here today, which is why you really only need to focus on totality and permanence. And you can look at the job description. I don't know if everyone has a copy of it in front of them. Some of the firefighters will know more about what the job description is than others who aren't firefighters. But this is the opportunity to walk everyone through, you know, while you have a job description. And let me also describe to everybody another common question. And this was pointed out by the attorneys that you heard from. But you know, the legislature in adopting 175-185 recognizes that the firefighters are disabled if they can't do the job of a firefighter. So even though an applicant, then, for example, if you were to ask the question, what has Mr. Colvin been doing the last 6 months, and that I don't know the answer to that question, but let's say that he was working in a different capacity, unless he is doing things that are similar to the job of a firefighter, he's allowed to have a gainful employment in the future so long as he's able to do a future job. But something that you will definitely want to look at in the future is he doing something similar to firefighting jobs? And if that's the case, then you, by all means, have the right to get him reexamined. And that's a condition to receipt of a benefit, that if someone doesn't want to comply with your reasonable requests in the future, you have the ability to suspend or to terminate the benefit if someone refuses to be reexamined in the future. And what we could do at a future meeting is we could distribute, it's all set forth, in fact, this is probably not a bad idea, even for the applicant to keep it in his materials, but it's all of Article 9 of the pension plan, sections 901 all the way through 914. So there are 14 separate paragraphs that goes into more detail than we need. And I'll also point out to you that there are certain exclusions in the plan. And this is just another roundabout way of answering your question. Had the applicant had a condition that was related to an intentionally self-inflicted wound, so that's an exclusion in the plan, or habitual use of drugs or intoxicants, narcotics, if the member who was applying for a disability, as it turns out, that their condition was caused by things they were doing to themselves, for example, crack cocaine, those are grounds to deny a disability. Likewise, there is an exclusion for a disease sustained while participating in riots, civil insurrections, or while willfully or illegally fighting or rioting. So those are the sorts of things that are exclusions, but I will tell you as your attorney that none of those exclusions in Section 9.14 of the plan apply, which is why I'm focusing everyone on the three points that we've been discussing.
Right, and that I guess I should have reworded my question. I just want to make sure that we're covering everything that's appropriate towards this session other than just those.
So thank you for the question, and yes, we are covering everything in my mind has been met. In fact, another question that comes up is how long does someone have to wait before they can apply? And in this case, the applicant has done everything he has had to do in terms of applying. It is a complete application package that was submitted, and now we need to focus on is it total, is it permanent, and do trustees have any questions? And if you find that all the requirements are satisfied, then the appropriate motion is to grant the disability, and then the actuary will begin the process of figuring out, getting the data, and collecting the information, the pay information, and doing the calculations. So, again, and I welcome trustees. It's an informal hearing, and there's no such thing as a stupid question, and this is the day to ask it, because you have an attorney on the phone who is your attorney. You then have the applicant's attorney, and you have the applicant. So,
okay.
I welcome any questions.
Bob, have you been working as a lumberjack in the last 6 months?
In the last 6 months, basically, I've been staying home, taking care of my kids, and helping around the house. I do not work out of the home, no.
He's not worked since May 22nd, 2009.
Correct.
As a firefighter at all.
Still on medication.
Yes, sir.
All the medications that were listed by Dr. Nosro, the Plavix, lisinopril, the Zocor, Tricor, aspirin, Paxil, he is still taking those so he can skip another meal a day.
Okay. And you're not working as a police officer, corrections officer, or anything like that. Okay. Just be advised that we can bring you back in at any time. I know you're out of state now, living somewhere else, and if we catch you working as a lumberjack, we have the ability to do surveillance and all that other sort, you know, and if we do find that you have gained employment working in a very stressful, laborious job like something like that, then we can have you re-examined and bring you back before the board, and we can cancel your disability pension. Just want you to be aware of that.
Thank you.
Trustees, another question which is commonly asked, and there's a lot of medical terminology that's in the medical reports, and as everyone knows, we don't have a doctor in the room. We have we have firefighters, we have city employees, we have attorneys. But what is a common question that is often asked is sometimes to have the applicant describe, and I'm looking again at page one of Dr. Nocero's report, some of the treatment that was provided is bypass surgery, catheterization, and angioplasty. And to the extent that trustees might not know what all those procedures involve, that's a reasonable question, is to ask the applicant to describe what does that mean when someone underwent angioplasty or a bypass, coronary artery bypass surgery.
You had the occlusion in the bypass?
I did.
He had two occlusions. He had a 90% in one artery and one in the 80%
the
and in then
the,
subsequently he had a occlusion.
Grafted.
Yes, sir. The bypass failed, and that's where they had the stent in April of 2010.
Okay. Okay. No more questions by the board? Okay. If then it's appropriate now to entertain a motion. How should that motion be worded, Adam?
The motion is to grant the application for a service-connected disability if you find that all three requirements are satisfied.
Okay.
So moved.
Okay. Motion by Fred Stark.
I'll second.
Second by Shane Alexander. Discussion?
Just a little, some discussion after seeing this is our third or fourth disability that I've sat through. This seems to be, there's no contradictory information. In the past we've had some medical reports that were different
conflicting. Right.
Or we've had them where they were not under the assumption law. These all seem to fall in place within the ordinance. So as a board discussion in comparison, it seems that everything's met. As far as I'm concerned.
Right, we've got two of the city doctors actually that say that he is totally and permanently disabled, and then we sent him to our own physician. And our own physician that we hired to work for us, he's not working for anybody but us. We're paying his fee, and he has also come to the same conclusion. So, and then the state law is the state law.
Clearly meets the requirement.
Okay.
Did y'all need a copy of the pre-employment physical to put in the permanent record that you're going to keep, or do you have that?
I'm sure it's in here, and I just couldn't put my hands right on it.
Okay.
You know, and like I said, we have the 10 or 15 of them, you know, so like 10 or 15 times he was in the cardiac center, and they said he was without cardiac disease. So.
Got a motion.
Yeah, there's motion on the floor. There's a second. If there's no opposition to a unanimous vote, seeing and hearing none, the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
So,
Randy, you'll have the honor of collecting all copies from trustees, and I will prepare the order in light of what the board's decision was today, and then someone will notify the actuary to begin the calculation process.
Correct. I was just going to go over that with Bob. Now what we're going to have to do is figure out your final benefit calculation. Mm-hmm. We're going to be working with the actuary on that, and once we get all that stuff together, should take a week or so. Then we'll get back with you, and then we'll do an exit interview and see tell you what your optional forms of payment are. Adam, I saw something in the state law that said they have to take the normal form or the normal forms in the law. But if we have optional forms, are they able? Do you know?
That is an excellent question, and it's an easy answer. When Chapter 175-185 was amended in 1999, it provided that you have to give people who get a disability benefit the regular options that normal retirees are entitled to. Okay. So Mr. Colvin will have the option if he wants a 10-year certain, which is the normal form, he can choose it. If he wants a joint and survivor benefit, which will continue, this is inevitable in life and death, but after he passes one day, if he chooses a joint survivor option, then the reduced benefit would be paid to whoever he chooses as his joint annuitant.
Okay.
So there are lots of options in the plan, and the actuary will set them all forth in the calculations.
Okay.
And likewise, otherwise, if he has any questions through his attorney or otherwise, he should feel free to get in touch with you, Randy, and you know, that we want to make sure he understands the calculations when they're provided by Randall Stanley.
Correct. Okay.
Everybody, that will conclude the phone conference part of the meeting. Are there any other questions, or we're good to go?
The only question I have is, he okay to keep a copy of the notebook you all provided to him?
Absolutely.
Records? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Adam.
Bye-bye.
Ooh, he can talk.
You got to remember, we get to charge by the word sometimes.
Right, right.
The only question I have, Randy, is this going to satisfy the city as far as... They'll be happy now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, they will be.
Did he slow down to you when you asked him to slow down?
Maybe
he kept
for about
going.
2 seconds.
2 seconds.
That's actually a lower pain.
That's it. That's good.
Yeah, the city will be happy to terminate you now.
Yeah.
Thrilled and overjoyed beyond belief.
Yes. I'll go home and shoot the emails. And I apologize for the miscommunication there and the dates, but it was, you know, between me and Bob and then the attorneys and everybody, you know.
That's okay. What happened was the attorney who was going to come here and cover this with him had a trial scheduled for today.
Right.
And I had one scheduled. Mine ended up getting continued because the judge got ill, so I was able to come and cover it.
Oh, excellent. Perfect.
So, unfortunately, it forced us to meet over Cracker Barrel, and we had to do pancakes and stuff, and I'm stuffed, but, you know, the all things right. I got to do. But we would appreciate y'all getting
thank
it in so quickly.
Much.
That's awesome.
I'd be a relief to my okay. family, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be in touch shortly you, with your options. Okay.
Thank you again.
All
nice
right.
To see you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have interviews today?
No. Because there was just a lot of confusion with this whole thing and getting the doctor's report from Dr. Nasaro. I mean, just one thing happened after another, you know. We got Dr. Nasaro called me a month and a half ago, right after he did the thing, and he said, okay, where do I send the report and the bill to? The doctor called me himself, not even one of his assistants.
It's just because he knew you spoke Yiddish.
No. I said, here's the address, you know, and I'm running down to headquarters every other day looking for this report, you know, so we can get this thing scheduled, because this kind of went with the real estate thing, you know, we just needed to get that report. Nothing. So 2.5 weeks later, I get a call from his office stating he needs the medical records.
Oh, dear.
I'm like, and then I called Adam. I said, you didn't send the medical records? He says, well, blah, 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 blah. No. So then Adam sent him the medical records. Then once he sent the medical records, the guy went and he was out on vacation for a while. And then he came back from vacation. And then it's just been one thing after another, trying to get this date held down, you know, to this date and everything. Anyway, it was just last week I got Dr. Nasaro's report. I think it was Wednesday of last week. And so, anyways, I called him back, you know, and said, now that you've got all the medical files, we need the report. And then I was trying to keep in contact with Dave to schedule the real estate, and then he said it just got, some of the presenters had already had other appointments elsewhere, so he said, we'll just have to pick another date for the real estate. So. That's what's going on there. As far as other general business, I did send an email to the city manager requesting that our other position be filled. City manager's done it in the past. He stated he didn't know that it was his job to do it. You know, when I talked to him. He had a meeting before, and he said he didn't know that it was his responsibility. He thought it was city council, so it's the city's responsibility. Whoever wants to take on the responsibility, I don't know, but it's the city's responsibility to fill those two positions. And the main criteria there is that they're a city resident. They have to live within city limits. They cannot live outside city limits, and that rules out a lot of good qualified people, but anyways, I sent a letter to the city manager back on August the 6th, and I'll follow up on that to see if he or council or anybody. I also put out some feelers, you know, to people, you know, asking them if they would be interested, you know, and then if they are interested, I'll send them to the city manager or to the city council to see if they want to serve on the board. The other thing is Shane is not running for re-election this time around. And Alicia has come up with a ballot and thing to put out to all the fire departments, inquiring all other firefighters who would like to serve on the board, you know, to send nominations to her. And then we would have an election for Shane's position, which is September 30th. He's in on through September. So we will, I sent the thing to Shane, and both of us agree that it looks good. The nomination form looks good, so we're going to go ahead and put that out to all the fire departments and get a see how many nominations we get to fill his position, and then that will be taken care of hopefully by, easily by the end of September. So I don't even know if we'll have any meetings between now and then, but it depends on his real estate then.
I'll probably still come, maybe come say goodbye to everybody on the last one, November.
I have a question about the election.
Yes.
Currently, the election process for the general board is different than the police board. Dale actually counts the ballots and then brings the results to the board, and they certify the election. The general board actually participates in that count. So I was wondering how you wanted to handle the election counting of ballots if it comes to that. Does the board want to participate?
I'll just be happy if there's more than one candidate that we have.
We've never had more than one nomination, so we've never had an election. So
you've never had an election?
Correct.
Wow.
We have a nomination. Like when I come up every year, someone will nominate me and nobody runs against me. And it's the same thing with Shane. Every 2 years, I put a thing out to all the stations that my position on the board is for re-election. If anyone would like to nominate someone to serve on the board, you know, then they can nominate somebody. But they see how much work it is. It's a massive commitment, as you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of, and the pay is really bad.
It's nothing.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So it's not like Rick. I know Rick's rolling in the dough.
That's it. Yeah.
But so, anyways, yeah, there are not a lot of people who are willing to. There's a couple of people. I've been taking them to the schools.
All right. We've tried to involve people over the last 3 or 4 years, trying to get some younger, financially intelligent, Jason people, you know, somebody can roll into the process. So we've had two or three.
Yeah, and the union does help out in that manner, because when we go to some of the conferences, the board cannot pay their way. Mm-hmm. You know, the board can only pay for board members, but the union will pay for the union members.
Apprentices.
Yeah, apprentices, mm-hmm. I don't even necessarily need apprentices, you know, but the more people in the fire department who are educated on all these issues, on all this pension stuff, the better it is for the labor union, the better it is for us as board members, as trustees, and the better it is all the way around. Yeah. We want people educated, you know, so there's not a lot of
rumor and
false information going around the stations. So even if they're not interested in serving on the board, we still send them to some of these pension schools, because I think it's a very good use of union monies rather than sending them to sporting events.
I can't believe you just said that.
You can repeat that as much as you want, wherever you
want. I can't believe that.
As loud as you want.
Randy's an Olympic swimmer. He used to go off these sporting events and kick butt at them.
But anyways, yes, as far as board members goes, we're still waiting for, you know, this other appointee from the city. And then Shane will be replacing his position here shortly. Another issue I want to bring back, we spoke about it at the last meeting, is the buyback thing. We've got the two employees that are affected. And I'm going to get with the attorneys and the lawyers on that and find out what we need to do. I think, you know, it's my opinion, and I'm just going to run it by them, that they need to be offered what everybody else was offered. It's only fair, you know, and with the markets down the way they are, you know, we offer to them now, we'll get it over with, the markets are down. They probably, you know, had their money been in the plan, it wouldn't have been making that much money anyways because the markets have been down. So I don't think it's going to be a huge financial thing. And then now we'll know from this point forward, anybody who was employed with the city leaves employment and comes back, we give them that option to buy back into the plan. We give them like 90 days, I think it is. And they weren't given that option. They weren't given that opportunity. And in all fairness, they should have been. It's two people. One was only here 1 or 2 years, 1.5 years, so it's not that significant. But I will run it by the attorney and make sure that we can do that.
Okay.
Another thing, we have new... City is, what do you call, digitizing or getting very forward, what's that word I'm thinking of?
For the minutes?
For the minutes.
Yeah.
For data-wise and all this stuff. So they're creating these minutes. Did you give me all those minutes? Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. Here's the new format for the new minutes.
Yeah. The general agenda.
The general
agenda.
Everything is going to be like this. The general board, the police board, all the different committees and mm-hmm. meetings, and everything is going to be this exact
so it's standardized.
Same format. Standardized. Mm-hmm. We're going to have the minutes, and then
it goes right out on the internet.
That's the long form. Here's the short form.
And the short form should post, you know, within a day or so of the
meeting. Right. It's just the motions that were made mm-hmm. and the results of the motions. That's going to post the day after or 2 days after the meeting itself. And then this is a more in-depth detail with the comments and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
and those
will post immediately after the meeting.
They've been reviewed by the board and approved.
Right. And then once we read, review, and approve these, then they'll be posted with all the comments in there. But anyways, this is the new format.
So were you trying to say that the city's becoming more visible where anybody can use stuff, or you're just saying that?
I'm saying that's true, but I'm saying more technologically advanced, taking advantage of all the technology that's out there. Because before we would get, you know, Alicia would sit, I used to do it, sit and listen to the meetings and write down this and write down that. And we'd get two or three meetings behind, you know, where the minutes were approving minutes for 2 or 3 meetings ago, and now it's like bam.
Just
that day
improved professional standards.
Yeah, exactly. With technology,
and it's faster and more
efficient.
Efficient.
Yeah.
People from the outside can view these agendas and then get used to the format and understand them.
Yeah, and they can listen to the meetings because they are not only are these going to be posted on the internet, not the intranet, but the internet. So too are the recordings. So you can go home and listen to me talk right now on the internet.
If you're gone or whatever, you'll be able to get to them.
Right, right.
When does that start?
It's actually out there now.
He's not going to give us a little notification on that so we can kind of bad jokes.
I was testing some things. This also should, once I've done the agenda and post it to the and published it, it should send you an email that has mm-hmm. the agenda, whatever the packet is, everything that's mm-hmm. behind it, just like council works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and one other item, I know I mentioned at our last meeting that my printer was having, giving me problems, and went back and tweaked it and pushed it and kicked it and unplugged it and replugged it in, and finally I took the cartridge out, the ink cartridge, I put a new ink cartridge in, and it worked. The old one wasn't bad, it even said, you know, there's plenty of ink on the old one, but for some reason, well, what I did is, paper got jammed in there, so I pulled it out, the front, and then as soon as I pulled it out, it printed up a paper saying, if paper gets stuck, don't pull out from the front, pull out from the back. But it didn't tell me that until after I did it. So, anyways, I put a new cartridge in, and it seems to be working fine now, so I'm going to just cross my fingers and hope that I don't do a lot of printing on it. I do more scanning on it than anything else, but hopefully that'll be good for a long time to come. So I don't need a printer, and I'm not going to. I did go to IT and ask them if they had any printers laying around or anything, and they said no.
I have a question about the recording. We just discussed the HIPAA requirements for Colvin. So anything we discussed with him verbally that disclosed his physical condition or medications or anything like that?
Will be on the internet. That's why I stressed to him, you know, because we have HIPAA laws and all these laws. Now all the written stuff is not available for everyone. But all the verbal communication is on the internet, and that's why.
You're sure about that differentiation? Because I know with HIPAA, it doesn't matter. If it's written, then verbal is just is the same category. I'm saying with HIPAA laws, that file right there, verbally spoken by any of us, is the same, falls into the same category, unless somebody's saying this, you know, legally, because it's a hearing. You know, but you're splitting hairs on sunshine versus HIPAA, and I know verbal communication is the same as written when it comes to HIPAA.
That's why he signed that release of medical information for the board.
Signed a waiver?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He signed a waiver for the board. But he didn't sign a waiver for 50,000 citizens to listen to it on the internet and hear all his personal stuff.
I don't run it back by the attorney, but I'm nearly positive that if it's a disability hearing, all that stuff is available to the public and they can listen to. And that's why I told him, I said, you know, there can be personal stuff in here, and I want you to understand that this is out there for everybody.
Yeah, I think we need to ask, because if that's the case, then why are we picking up and destroying the other things? The email. He said the emails have to get destroyed. So what you emailed me outlining his doctor stuff, I have to destroy the email that I received. That I've already moved into a folder. Well, it's electronic, no different than the audio recording. It's going to be distributed to anybody.
Right.
That's so that it can't be seen outside of the meeting.
These documents cannot be seen outside the meeting. All this personal stuff cannot be seen outside this meeting. But anything we discuss about anything that's in here will be.
That can be. I mean, I'm saying I can see where you could strike through his medications or his medical condition. You could still hear. That's distributable, but just like the minutes you type up, or when you type up minutes, are you going to put in there the medication he's taken?
No.
Are you going to put in there his conditions? Well, if we discuss that verbally and you're about to put that out there, I mean, surely you see where it's splitting hairs and we need to check on it before we distribute it, because then we're going to be violating his HIPAA rights.
Okay, I'll call Adam and clarify that today, but.
Because I remember previously, with our previous, anything we discuss is out there, but his specific personal medical condition or medications was not outside of the meetings. Not his necessarily, but our previous disability hearings. If we can sit around and say, well, this is the decision we made, and we discussed the ordinance, all that's public record, but as soon as you got into his personal medications or conditions, it was not.
But it's always been recorded on a disc, and anyone can come get that disc or recording at any time in full length.
And maybe, right, but then maybe we've been violating their HIPAA laws all the time. And if it's, you know, I mean, I'm not sure of all the HIPAA consequences. I know they're severe.
I believe that when you decide to file for a disability. And that's why I told him about the confidentiality of it. That's why I stressed to him, this is going to be out there for everyone to hear. And if you don't want that to be out there, then you might want to think twice on filing for a disability hearing, because it can be embarrassing stuff, and it can be, you know, a lot of different stuff can be out there. But it is, and, you know, the attorney, I will run it by him, and then the next conference I go to when I have the discussion on disability, I'll bring it up, because we have all the Florida state attorneys attend all these conferences, and I will bring that up at the next conference, you know, to ask not only our attorney, but other attorneys as well. But, and I sat here for Lee's, you know, some of Lee's meeting, Lee Diener's, you know, and like I said, the paper documents and all this are, go ahead.
The second paragraph states that it becomes official record under the governing the Sunshine Law. So that release of medical, that second paragraph. Shane, you want to read it? I think it answers that question.
I further understand and authorize the Board of Trustees or any person acting on their behalf to include any discussion of the medical information in its official records, and understand that should my medical condition ever become an issue regarding approval or denial of disability retirement, that said information may become the subject of a public discussion at a meeting governed by the government in the Sunshine Law and or public record governed by the Florida Public Records Act.
But that doesn't say that he recognizes that the information will become a part of general public's knowledge and the purview of the general public.
The government and Sunshine Law, that is the government and Sunshine Law, anybody can access that information. I mean, it doesn't say it in those exact words, but...
Right. I would still prefer to get a ruling, because from our attorney, because if we're going to put all that in there, how come we're not going to put in there that it's going to go on the internet where 6 billion people can listen to it?
Okay.
Because there's a changed process here. The process has changed. It's not a file in your cabinet that you can track who's listening to it. I mean, we're about to change the information distributing process, we should get a ruling on it.
We have changed, but we haven't. Because it says and or public record governed by the Florida Public Records Act. All of our meetings have always been recorded. And all of our meetings, all of those recordings have always been available to any public entity whatsoever. All they need to do is come in and ask for a recording, a copy of that meeting.
But you have to change, you got to go look at their definitions and what construes a record, a medical record. Does any conversation that's engendered as the result of the record, is that considered a medical record? Right. And if so, well, then, you know, you got a problem.
Right. And
because his attorney is the guy that offered up.
He's the one that did it.
He offered up all the drugs, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So I don't think he would have done that.
Would you like to run it by our attorney right now?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if we can, because I'm...
You mean to just hit me down?
The,
9.
Oh. Sorry.
See how technically smart you are.
And I mean, getting back to your point, you just said...
Law offices?
Yeah, hi, Marilyn. It's Randy again.
Hi.
Is Adam or Bob in?
No. Adam left. And Bob is out of town.
Is Stu in?
No. But let me give you, because he's on his way home, okay? So let me give you his cell phone number, Adam, and call him on his cell. Okay?
Okay.
All right? Or else I can have him call you, either way.
I'll call him on his cell, just
okay.
Right.
Okay, all right. It's area code 954-253-7704.
Okay.
All right?
Thanks a lot, Marilyn.
All right, Brandy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you dial 9 first?
Yeah, 9, then 1.
Can I ask him, since he encouraged us to ask him everything while he was on the phone already?
Adam, look,
Adam. Hi, Adam. This is Randy up in Ocala.
Hey, Randy.
And we finished the hearing and everything, and we just, this issue has arisen, so we wanted to run it by you.
Okay, are we still in the form of a board meeting?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Adam, this is Shane Alexander. I had a HIPAA question regarding the release of information that we discussed, either his condition or medications. The city of Ocala, currently all their board meetings are recorded automatically within a short time. They'll be on the internet where anybody can listen to the recordings. So everything that we discussed today, relatively speaking, tomorrow it'll be on the internet where anybody can listen to it.
That's fine.
So any specific heart condition or medications or anything that we discussed with him, anybody can listen to it on the internet, and that's not going to violate his HIPAA rights.
That's correct. We are going to destroy the medical records, but we operate in the sunshine, and if we commonly record board meetings, then that's perfectly appropriate. But I've got no objection to doing that.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, and it illustrates to you the common question which comes up, which is, how do you reconcile the Sunshine Law? Florida is very proud of the fact that, you know, we have open government in Florida. How do you reconcile the Sunshine Law with confidentiality and medical records and protections? And the answer is, you know, that's why you exercise some discretion here, and you don't need to, and we're not talking about this one particular individual, but there are instances where there can be very embarrassing things in someone's medical records, but nevertheless, if you need to discuss it for a public board meeting, the public has a right to know about it, and at the end of the day, you know, no one is forced to apply for a disability, so that's one of the conditions that attaches. If you want to get a public pension that's a disability pension, then you have to understand that the business is conducted for the public to hear, and anyone, a media reporter or anyone else could be present taking notes. That's the answer, so.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Adam.
Okay. That also raises a related question, which is, you don't have to put the board meetings on the internet unless you choose to do so, and, you know, that might be something you want to examine with the city. Do they need to go through the expense and the aggravation of putting all board meetings on the internet? That's a city question. That's something you could look into in the future if you ever wanted to discuss that with the city.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, thanks, everybody.
All right, thanks.
Clock's coming.
Right.
All right.
And another thing. And that brings up this issue.
He had it answered in 45 seconds, and it took 2 minutes to explain it. I'm like, really?
Okay. So you happy with that?
You better hope he doesn't go on the internet and listen to it now.
No, I don't mind. I'd tell him to his face. He likes to talk. All right. And it's kind of good that he talks fast. Can you imagine how long it would take?
I'm satisfied now. So.
Okay. Does anyone else have any issues coming up or any questions? Or?
No, I don't.
Okay. With that, with no further business for the board, the meeting is adjourned at 2:12 p.m.
Can I see you before you go, Fred?